Hey, how you doing? Thanks for downloading the show. This is Garden Fork Radio. It's me and my friends talking about what we think are interesting things. It's an eclectic how-to show. Today, we're going to talk with my friend Aaron from the Impatient Gardener YouTube channel and Super Duper website about getting your garden ready for fall and winter and buying yourself or your significant other some cool garden tools. So welcome, Aaron.
Hey, Eric, how are you?
I'm good. Have you had a hard frost yet up there?
Yes, we've had several of those, but it's been more or less a really nice fall so far.
Yeah, we've had frost, but not like rock hard frost. So like it's about 10:30 right now and I can go out and get those oak leaves off my lawn.
Nice.
So we were going to talk about getting ready for winter and you're probably more organized than I am about that kind of thing. So what are you doing around the magnificent garden?
You know, I'm just going to say, because we've had this nice weather, I'm feeling really good about where I'm at this year in terms of winter preparedness. You know, sometimes I end up with this situation where you just work, and then you get either like a ton of snow or you can't get out there. And it's like, okay, well, I guess that's done now. So I'm actually feeling pretty good about it. So, you know, the first thing that you got to deal with, obviously, is leaves. Leaves seem to be a really big question for people. And I think it's because the thing that you used to be told to do with leaves was like bag them up and send them to the dump.
Yep.
So of course now, and I know you love leaves too. You know, now it's like,
I heart leaves.
Right. I hoard them. If I sometimes take some from my neighbors because there's so many ways to use leaves, but I like to get them cleared off the grass for sure. I mean, I know there's a movement out there to leave leaves lie where they fall, but I don't like to leave leaves on the grass and I don't think that's good. I don't care for the look of that anyways. So, you know, we've been cleaning off the grass. So the grass is pretty clean at this point because we've dropped all the leaves we can, but most of them end up chopped up in some way, either in my compost or as a mulch on my garden beds or both of those. I don't make leaf mold per se, which is actually a really great amendment. I just kind of throw it all in the compost bin and I get some sort of, it kind of becomes a mix between leaf mold and compost and eventually all becomes compost. So
what's the difference?
So compost is, with leaves, it's all about decomposition. So you're just sort of speeding up that decomposition process by adding in the nitrogen parts. And compost actually has some nutritional value. Leaf mold is strictly just leaves that have just broken down. And you can do that in like a big bin made out of chicken wire, or you can actually stick them in plastic garbage bags with holes poked in the side and then just set them aside and leave them for like a year. Keep them moist.
Yeah.
And leave them like a year. And that is a really good soil amendment, but that doesn't really have any nutrition in it. That's just adding organic matter and lightening your soil and adding really good soil texture. So it's really good. It's just a little bit different from compost.
So the thing around here is I have two leaf drops. I have the sugar maples and then I have the oaks. And my neighbor came and blew all the leaves, the sugar maple leaves. And, you know, he has a big mower. He just is a favor. He comes and mows it all up. And then the oaks drop, and it's kind of left to me to deal with the oak leaves. And there's no way I want to leave those on the yard because it's almost like shoe leather. They're just really thick and they mat down and kill the grass in the spring. So like today, I'll go out there and hit part of the lawn with a rake. I don't get the thing about leaving them on the lawn unless you chop them up with a mower or something. But even that, I don't really love the idea of the oaks being on the yard.
Well, and oak leaves are sort of special.
That was polite.
Right. In that they're right. Shoe leather is a great way to sort of describe them. They're so thick and they take much longer to break down than most leaves do. So I do think that oak leaves are a really good one to chop up. Because anything you can do, the smaller you can make your parts, of course, the sooner things break down. So that really speeds up the decomposition process, especially for oak leaves. We've got the vegetable garden right now is actually full of oak leaves, which have fallen on the gravel. And those need to get out of there because I'm trying not to make soil on my gravel. So I don't have to have plants growing out of the gravel paths.
Are you a raking kind of person or a leaf blowing kind of person?
You know, I used to hate leaf blowers. But now, if we're doing like a really big area, then it's a rake. And if I like go into my garden beds and have to just pull out some of those leaves, it's much faster to just take a rake and to get them out of there.
Yep.
But in the vegetable garden where I've got those raised beds, it's much easier to blow those around because it just is a much more efficient process. Plus, because they're on gravel, they just sort of blow away much easier than if you're on lawn or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm torn about the leaf blower, but it's the kind of thing I might have to borrow my friend's leaf blower next year and experiment.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I mean, I think my problem with leaf blowers is that they're just loud and they're obnoxious when your neighbor's using them, you know? And then you realize that there's some times when they're really good. I think if you're working with if you're talking about leaves on pavement or something or on any sort of hard surface, then a leaf blower just takes care of it so much quicker. So it's just about time at that point. I also don't mind raking. I mean, if it's a nice day, I don't really mind that activity. I think it's kind of autumnal and nice.
You can listen to a Garden Fork Radio podcast while you rake your leaves.
You bet you can.
So let's go on a tangent here. It's not really prepping for fall, but it's planting, actually. Have you planted any garlic?
Yes, I did. In fact, I planted a ton of garlic this year, more than I have before, because in my analysis of my vegetable garden, which is something I mentally do every year at the end of the year, in terms of what did we actually eat, what did we actually enjoy, and what is worthy of space in my garden, garlic came at the top of that list in terms of things that were, I mean, I'm obviously still eating last year's garlic, but it's so great because it tastes so much better than what you buy in the store, and it's so cheap to grow, and I can keep that all winter. So I mean, we're feeding ourselves all the garlic we could ever want, and I share it too. So I actually expanded to a full 4x8 bed this year instead of the past couple of years, I've just done half of a 4x8 bed. How about you? Have you planted garlic?
I did, and I actually moved them to beds that are in a, they get more sun because I have an apple tree that is, what's the word, growing over my garden beds. So I got to trim that puppy back again. But they really do need sunlight. So I moved them to the beds that get more sunlight. My next challenge is to get more, nitrogen in that soil.
Mm-hmm. Do you plant with a fertilizer? I mean, do you do any fertilizing before you plant your garlic or no?
I put a time-release multi-purpose fertilizer on.
Yep.
So we're going to take a quick break here and we're going to come back and talk about more fall garden prep. All right. Hey, would you like to see more of Erin's world? Just type in Impatient Gardener and boom, she's everywhere. No, but really, her YouTube channel is The Impatient Gardener. On Instagram, she is just Impatient Gardener. And then her website, which is like ground zero for amazing information, is theimpatientgardener.com. So check out any of those. Oh, and she's also on Facebook. Let me click on the link here. And it is Impatient Gardener on Facebook as well. Wow, look at those pictures. All right, there you go. Back to the show. All right, we're back. So Erin, I either saw it in one of your YouTube videos or on Instagram. You were talking about watering your plants in the fall when the plants you were watering looked just about dead. And I was like, what's with that?
Yeah, it's such a big deal. In fact, I think that lack of water is why I've lost more plants over winter than just how tough the winter was. So it's super important to water any trees, shrubs, or perennials that you've planted this year, especially trees and shrubs. Anything you planted this year, you want them to go into winter well watered. Anything you can do to reduce the stress level of newly planted things will help ensure that they are able to weather the winter storm regardless of what it is. I mean, obviously there are some things they can't overcome, but you give them the best chance of making it through winter. And when I look back at things I've lost over winters, I often wonder if it wasn't a situation where they went into fall or into winter drought stressed from the get-go. So if you haven't had a lot of rain or something, it's a really good idea to water. And I will water, just last week I watered everything new that I planted, all the trees and shrubs that were new this year. And I will go out there again, right up until the ground's frozen. And at this point, the hoses are put away, but I'll just take the watering can out and give everything, you know, 3 gallons of water, big dump of water on it, just so that I know that they're really well hydrated going into winter. And you should be doing that as long as the ground is, I mean, once the ground is frozen solid, that water's not going anywhere. Ours is nowhere near, I mean, you can still work in the soil, no problem here. So plenty of time for watering here. So that's a big deal. I think it really helps things make it through winter.
I think a lot of people kill their rosemary plants by not watering them that way.
Well, rosemary's tough. I mean, do you get rosemary to overwinter by you?
No, I've given up and I just buy a new one every spring.
Yeah. It's tough in the colder zones. I mean, I think once you get to zone 7, overwintering rosemary is and rosemary's tricky because, you know, it needs moisture, but it wants well-drained soil. So it's an anomaly a little bit.
Difficult child in the garden.
Well, it's, you know, it's one of those Mediterranean herbs, and those Mediterranean herbs, they really just want to be in the Mediterranean. So think like you're in the Mediterranean.
I'm trying to be in the Mediterranean, but I'm in New England right now instead. So,
right. You and me both.
So this is something that I am bad at, and you seem to have a zest for in your videos, is actually cutting back plants.
Well, I would say the question I am asked more than any other question, and I judge what's going on in people's gardens based on my neighbors coming to my house. So when my neighbors come over, they only come, I mean, other than just to say hi, garden questions come in spring and fall when people want to know what they should be doing, and they're petrified that they're going to do something wrong and kill their garden. The question I'm asked the most is, should I be cutting everything back for winter? And I think that's because that's how a lot of people, I mean, that's how I was taught how to garden when I became even a master gardener. You cleaned up your whole garden. You know, you scalped it like you were like going to put your house on the market, pretend like there was never a garden there or something, clean everything up to within an inch of its life. Now the thinking on that is completely opposite. It's actually better to leave perennials standing if you can. I should say there is some evidence to suggest that it's better for the plant to leave things standing. And I think that's mostly because it allows the crown of the plant to, with all those stems, to help collect snow, which of course provides some insulation as well as moisture down the line. It also, it's really good from an ecological standpoint, because all sorts of insects and wildlife overwinter in those stems. And if you don't have anywhere for those things to live, they're not going to want to make your garden their home. So I really don't clean up much of anything in fall other than hostas. One, because they can kind of harbor slugs. Slugs are problem here. So I pull that stuff out, but two, because hostas get really slimy and disgusting in spring to pull them out. Yeah. So it's just very unpleasant. Yeah. But if you wait till the frost gets them, you can just pull them out. You don't even need to cut them really. You can just kind of pull all those leaves out. So I do try to get the hostas. And then if there's anything with disease on it, that's the other thing. If you've got a plant that's suffering from some kind of disease, generally speaking, you don't want those leaves to drop on the soil where it could potentially perpetrate that pathogen. So if you just want to clean those things up really well, everything else I leave standing. Now, you don't have to do it that way. I think if somebody had like a really busy spring, like if they were planning on going like a month-long vacation in spring, I guess I would clean my garden up in fall then, because it's not the end of the world if you do it. And that's the message I try to get to people, which is no matter which way you go, you're not going to kill your garden. So don't worry about it that much. Don't stress too much about it.
So my purple coneflower, which is Echinacea purpurea, by the way. Did you like I used that big word, Aaron?
Yeah, I did. I'm not gonna tell you how I'd pronounce that.
So they have kind of a spiny flower head that goes brown, and if you look closely, there are these little brown seeds in there, which can reseed if you want. But I also know that the chickadees and little sparrows and finches will eat that. If they're overwintering or they're migrating. So I'm going to leave all that stuff up. And then in the spring, I could cut that back down. And so cutting back is actually different than pruning, right?
Yes, pruning is, in my mind, when I think about most pruning, I think you're talking about woody trees and shrubs. I would just say, I mean, Eric, I want you to weigh in on this, but generally speaking, now is not the time to prune anything. Agree with that?
I like to prune in the dead of winter.
Yeah, that's actually a really good time. I mean, the exception to the don't prune now rule is if you've got dead wood on something that's obviously dead, you can always prune dead wood out. That never matters. And I know, Eric, that your philosophy is prune when you've got the pruners in your hand, which I don't think is a bad philosophy. I like that. I just think that a lot of people think now's the time to prune hydrangeas or prune whatever, you know, pick a shrub. And it's really not, because what you don't want to do is, and it's not a good time to prune evergreens or boxwood or something like that, because what you don't want to do is if you get a bit of a warm spell, you don't want to encourage new growth, because that growth will never harden off in time to make it through winter. And then you're dealing with frost damage. Also, you know, there's just no need to leave an open cut right now. So dead of winter is actually a really good time to prune. And then for things like hydrangeas that bloom on new wood, I'm going to stress that. That bloom on new wood, like late winter or early spring is the time that I do those. And then for anything that blooms on old wood, and I know that topic gets people confused. So old wood means it's setting the flowers on the growth it had last year. Yep. And new wood means it's blooming on growth it put on this year. So anything that blooms on old wood, which would be hydrangea macrophylla, those are the ones that turn pink or blue, weigela, lilacs, things like that. Those all bloom on old wood. So if you prune those now, or you prune those in winter, or you prune those in spring, you will be cutting off your flowers. So the only time it's appropriate to prune those is right after they're done blooming. And any other time, you're sacrificing next year's flowers, which sometimes you have to do if you have to control the size. But
I have a question about lilacs.
Yeah.
Lilacs kind of naturalize here, but they're getting real spindly and tall. And so we can't really enjoy the flowers because they're so high up. So could I do a radical pruning, like the 3-inch or 2-inch thick stems, trunks? Could I cut them off at the base, or is that a bad thing?
No, it's actually a great thing. But what I would suggest, if you can tolerate it, I think the better thing to do is to plan your pruning over like 3 years. So take out a third of the stems all the way to the ground this year. Take out a third of the stems all the way to the ground the following year. And then if you need more, take out a third of the stems the year after that. And that way you're not cutting away too much of the plant, because that can stress the plant to take away too much of the top growth. So it's a bit of a longer process once they get that big. It's a bit of a longer process to do that. But I think that's the way to do what they call rejuvenation pruning on lilacs.
Yeah, because they're beautiful, but they're just like too big. So all right, so I can take out a third. And I think I could remember that.
Yeah, and take it right back down to the ground. And you'll get new shoots. Yep.
Cool. All right. So quick break here. And then when we come back, Aaron and I are going to talk about favorite garden tools for gift giving or giving to yourself. We'll be right back. So we were going to talk about practical gifts for gardeners, and I thought we'd start because Aaron and I were talking before, and there's something that you shouldn't buy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the most practical tools that every single gardener needs in their life is a hand pruner, but I also think it is not the right gift to give a person unless they have specifically requested one and a specific one, because to me, as a gardener, my hand pruner is like my right arm. It is the tool that I probably use the most, but you have to find the right one for you. So some people are very brand loyal to specific hand pruners, and I don't find that they all work for me. So for instance, a lot of people swear that Felcos are the gold standard. And I tried somebody's Felcos once thinking, oh, maybe I got to see if I have to get a pair of these since they're so great. And this is what everyone talks about. And I don't personally care for them. So it has to feel right in your hand. And I think especially for for me, it's all about my hands are a touch smaller. I wear like a size small to medium garden glove. Or if you're like a guy with really big hands, there's no way that the two of us are going to be comfortable using the same hand pruner. So that's the thing that I say, don't buy that for someone, especially because I believe in buying good tools for most things. And a hand pruner, you should buy a good hand pruner. So you're talking $40 and up. And you don't want to spend $40 on something that's not going to fit somebody's hand properly. So I just have stopped suggesting to people to buy hand pruners, even though every gardener needs one. I just think it's something people have to try out for themselves and make sure it fits their hand right.
Exactly. The pruners that the camera operator uses are quite a bit smaller than the ones that I use. Actually, using your video, Aaron, I learned how to sharpen my hand pruners too. So thank you.
Isn't it satisfying to sharpen your hand pruners and have nice sharp tools? It's so great.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm an adult.
Right.
So what are some cool tools that we can share?
So, when it comes to sort of gift ideas for gardeners, I mean, I think gardeners in general are really practical people. I think most gardeners really like practical stuff. So although there are some great sort of pretty things for people to put in their garden, I think some really good stuff is, for one, like a folding pruning saw. I find myself using a folding pruning saw more often than I use a loppers. I think it leaves a cleaner cut. And you don't have to buy a super expensive one. Really, it's about being sharp. And because they're a serrated blade, it can be difficult to sharpen those serrated blades.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's better to just buy kind of an average one. And then when it gets dull, just get a new one. I hate to say that, but I think those are really nice. Also, things like trellises, that kind of hits both the pretty and the practical side of things. There's some really pretty ones out there. Kneeling pads. I mean, these are things that are, okay, let's just say a kneeling pad is not exactly an exciting gift to give somebody.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you a gardener will appreciate a good kneeling pad if they're the type to do that. I never thought I would use a kneeling pad until I had a kneeling pad. So pot feet, you know, just things to prop up your pots. Again, none of these things are glamorous, I would say. Like, here's some feet for the bottom of your pot. I can't think of a gardener who wouldn't get a little bit excited about that. So those are a few that come to my head. Things like gardening, like things to manage your tools is good. Sometimes people like little tool holsters, or there's like even belts that you can put all the stuff on, or an apron, something like that. Sometimes gardeners get into some of those things. I think those are good too. I would just say that if you get anything like that and you want to, as I say, zhuzh up that gift a little bit, you know, stick a couple little packets of seeds in there if you want to add a little something to it to make it a little bit more exciting, if you think that's not exciting enough. A few little packets of seeds. There's a company called Hudson Valley Seed Company.
Oh, yeah.
That makes these artist packs. They have artists design their seed packs. I've actually framed several of them and have them hanging in my kitchen. So you could pick up a couple of those seed packs, and they're quite pretty. Or actually, if you save seeds from your own garden, I mean, I always think gifts, that's almost like a homemade gift. I think that's a lovely gift to just give someone a few packs of seeds from your own garden so that they have a piece of your garden. And then this is the most unglamorous idea I have for a practical gift for a gardener, but I love these waste cleanup bags. It's like a tip bag. There's one that I really like that has sort of a batten in the top of it, you know, to help hold it open.
Oh, right.
And I love those because you just kind of tip them over and scooch the stuff into it. But I use those things all the time. I also got a gift from one of the first big Christmas gifts I got from my husband many years ago was a wheelbarrow, and it was great. So anyway, those are some of my ideas. What do you have on your list?
One of those giant pole pruners, a really good one, not the cheap ones.
Good idea.
You know, the kind of telescope. And they have the they have a push and pull pruning blade on them, and then they have the bypass. Is it a bypass?
Yep.
Cutter with the rope, so you can cut smaller stuff, but you can hack off big limbs, and it's also like a really nice fiberglass poles that telescope. With that, you can stay on the ground. And I think a lot of people might be reluctant to buy that for themselves, but it's a big dollar item. I think those are probably over $100, but might be kind of hard to wrap.
I was just going to say wrapping is the real problem with that.
A challenge. Maybe you can make a card and take a picture of the pruner and say, it's in your garage, you know?
Right. No, that's an excellent suggestion. And I agree with you that buying a good one of those, because those you'll have forever. So just buy a good one for somebody, and because they work so much better when they're good. The cheap ones are just frustrating.
The other thing, when I bought our little house in the country, this came with the house, and it's one of those plywood wooden garden carts with the big bicycle wheels.
Oh, okay.
A garden way cart, I think it's called. And I would have never bought this thing. But it's essentially, it's almost like having a little mini pickup truck for your yard, the pickup bed at least. I can haul dirt and gravel or plants or tool. I just used it yesterday. I'm putting in the new invisible fence wire, and I could have all the tools I needed. And it can go over bumpy, it could go through the woods, it can go over stone walls. And I would have never bought the thing, but I've actually replaced the tires on it twice. I've had my house 20 years. The thing was at least 10 years old when I got it. So this 30-year-old cart just keeps going and going. So I thought about that similar to the wheelbarrow. I mean, you buy it once and it's forever. And then you keep thinking about that person, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
The other thing I thought was just, if you're going to buy a gift for yourself, the pruners, you get what you pay for with the hand pruners. The expensive ones are expensive, but they'll last forever.
Yeah, and most and all of those expensive ones that I'm aware of, you can buy replacement parts. So if you lose a spring or whatever, you can replace the parts on them. So you just make that investment once and then take good care of them. Try not to lose them in the garden, which is a common problem. So try not to lose track of them. By the way, it's like sunglasses. Just, you know, if you buy the cheap sunglasses, you'll lose them all the time. If you buy a good pair of sunglasses, you'll never lose them because you actually keep track of them. Same deal with hand pruners. Just buy the good ones. Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite brand of hand pruners, or is it not a brand thing for you? It's just finding the right ones.
I have the Felcos and I like them.
See, right. Yeah.
But I have a big hand.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just kind of works for me, but I do know that for people with smaller hands, the Felcos, it's personal preference, but I also like that you can buy parts for them. I have left them out in the yard. They've rusted kind of. Or I don't rust it. They got gummed up, and I could clean them up and rebuild them, and they were just fine. So
yeah, that's actually a really good tip for people. This is not a gift idea, but if you go to a rummage sale and there's a bunch of like or estate sale or something, and there's a bunch of rusty garden tools, look at them closely because good garden tools can be brought back to life.
Oh, we can make a video about that.
Yeah, we could.
There's whole YouTube channels where the guy or woman buys some beat up tool or pulls it out of the dirt of someone's backyard and they rebuild the tool and they make videos about that. Just restoration of tools.
Yeah. One other tool that I just want to bring up that I think a lot of people love once they get it is a hori hori, also known as a soil knife. That is my do it all in the garden. It's got, you can plant with it. You can, most of them have a little like tape measure on them, although I don't worry too much about how deep I'm ever planting anything. you can cut open bags with it. And I mean, it just, it does make you feel like pretty tough cookie when you're walking around the garden with this big knife on. So,
beat back the bears.
Right. There are wood handled ones. I've had several of those. The one that I like the best is, there's an orange handled one. It's a plastic orange handle. It comes from A.M. Leonard. I like that one for two reasons. One, the handle is a little bit more ergonomic and smooth. And two, it's an orange handle. Someday, 100 years from now, someone will come to my garden and wonder why I planted so many soil knives all over the place. So many wood handled soil knives have lost their lives from neglect somewhere in this garden. You can always do the old trick where you paint the handle, but I even tied a big red ribbon to one of them, and I lost it anyway. So,
well, cool. So Erin has a post, actually several posts on her site that we'll link to in the show notes here. But if you go to theimpatientgardener.com and just type in gifts for gardeners, a bunch of them will show up. And I mean, your website is just like, I wonder when you sleep. Because in addition to a full-time job, which is not about gardening, you do all this. And I'm exhausted just thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm exhausted thinking about it too.
All right, cool. That about wraps it up for today. I hope that you've reached your destination or maybe you're done with your workout. I listen to podcasts when I work out. Oh, we're going to talk about this new workout thing I've discovered that actually gets me to go exercise, and you can do it just about anywhere. So stay tuned for that. But Erin, anything else you want to add in?
Nope, that was great. It was always nice to be on here. You know, I would just say when we go back to the thing about winter, don't stress about your garden too much. Most, you can't really screw it up too badly, so don't worry about it too much. And as far as gifts go, you know, just enjoy the giving part of getting a gift for somebody. That's the important part.
And be gracious about those gifts that people give you.
That too.
All right, thanks everyone. Let us know your thoughts. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. Thanks. Garden Fork Radio is produced by Garden Fork Media LLC in Brooklyn, New York. The music used in our show is licensed from uniquetracks.com and audioblocks.com. The executive producer of Garden Fork Radio is Jimmy Gutz. You can learn more about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com.